Chapter 2. After Miss Jenkins passed away, I did not think I would go to Cranford again. So I was pleasantly surprised when I received a letter from Miss Pole inviting me to stay with her. A few days later, Miss Matty also wrote to me, telling me that she would be happy to have me at her home when I visited Cranford. I promised to stay with her after I ended my visit with Miss Pole. And the day after my arrival at Cranford, I went to see her. Miss Matty began to cry as soon as she saw me. I tried to comfort her. As I told her about all the good qualities Miss Jenkins had, Miss Matty cried quietly. "Dear Miss Matty," I said, taking her hand. I did not know how to tell her how sorry I was for her. She was left all alone in the world. "My dear," she said, "I'd rather you did not call me Matty. My sister did not like it. Please call me Matilda." I promised, and I tried to call her Miss Matilda. In fact, the whole town tried. But we were not successful. After some time, we started calling her Miss Matty again. My visit to Miss Pole was very quiet. Now that Miss Jenkins was gone, there was no one in town who knew how to give a party. So I spent my time listening to Miss Pole's stories about the past while she knitted and I sewed. One of her stories was about a love affair that she had suspected many years ago. After my visit with Miss Pole, I went to Miss Matilda's house. She tried her best to make me comfortable. She came to the room as I unpacked my things. "Are you happy with your room, dear?" she asked. "My sister used to arrange things. She had the best methods. She could teach a new maid in a week, but I am not as good as her. The new girl has been with me a few weeks and she still cannot do things properly." Then she asked me if I could stay longer and help her teach the new maid. I wrote to my father, and when he said he did not need me at home, I accepted Miss Matilda's request. Martha, the new maid, was a rough, honest-looking girl who had lived on a farm. I promised Miss Matilda that I would teach her the rules of the house. Of course, I was talking about Miss Jenkins's rules. Martha was an honest and well-meaning girl, but she did not know much, and teaching her how to do things would not be easy. And now I come to the love affair. It seems that Miss Pole had a cousin who had wanted to marry Miss Matty a long time ago. His name was Thomas Holbrook, and he lived 5 miles from Cranford on his own estate, which was not very large. He was proud of who he was and never wished to be someone else. His house door was always open in the summer. He did not need a servant or a lock on his door. "He is a country man, honest and real," said Miss Pole. "He used to read aloud more beautifully than anyone I have ever heard." "And why didn't Miss Matilda marry him?" I asked. "Oh, I don't know. I think she wanted to, but probably her father and her sister didn't think Cousin Thomas was a real gentleman. They didn't want Miss Matty to marry beneath her. She was the rector's daughter, and they are also relatives of Sir Peter Arley." "Poor Miss Matty," I said. "But this is my guess. All I know is that he asked and she refused. I don't know the real reason why." "Has she seen him since then?" "I don't think so. He has been to Cranford once or twice after that." "How old is he?" I asked. "He must be about 70, I think, my dear," said Miss Pole. Interestingly, not long after our talk, I had the chance to see Mr. Holbrook. Miss Matty and I were at the shop buying some silk fabric when suddenly an old man came in. He was a good-looking man, tall and thin, and I watched him as he waited impatiently. Miss Matty had not seen him. When the old man told the shop boy what he needed, she heard his voice. She looked shocked for a moment and sat down. I immediately guessed who the man was. It was their first meeting after 30 or 40 years. "Miss Jenkins wants the black silk," shouted another shop boy. Mr. Holbrook heard the name and hurried towards us. "Matty, Miss Matilda, Miss Jenkins," he shouted excitedly. "I did not recognize you. How are you? How are you?" He kept shaking her hand warmly. "I did not recognize you," he repeated. We left the shop together. Neither Mr. Holbrook nor Miss Matilda had bought anything. Mr. Holbrook seemed very pleased to meet his old love again. He talked about his life and even talked about Miss Jenkins. "Your poor sister," he said. "Well, we all have our faults." After he walked us home, we said our goodbyes. Miss Matty went up to her room and did not come back until tea time. A few days later, Mr. Holbrook sent a note, inviting us to spend a day at Woodley. It was June now, and the days were quite hot. He wrote that he had also invited his cousin Miss Pole, so the three of us could ride in the same carriage. I expected Miss Matty to say yes, but she did not. Miss Pole and I had to persuade her to go. She thought it was not right for an old lady to see her old love. After we talked to her for several hours, she agreed, and I wrote a letter to Mr. Holbrook in her name saying we would be coming. The next morning, Miss Matty and I went to the shop. She bought three bonnets. She decided to wear the best one on the day of our visit on Thursday. On our long drive to Woodley, Miss Matty was quite nervous. She had never been there before. I could see that. It was not easy for her to see the place which might have been her home. Woodley House was surrounded by fields and had an old-fashioned garden full of roses and bushes. Our carriage brought us to a little gate, and we got out and walked up a little path to the house. "I think it is very pretty," whispered Miss Matty, as Mr. Holbrook appeared at the door. He welcomed us warmly. As the ladies went inside, I asked to walk around the garden. The old gentleman was pleased and showed me around the place. He had 26 coos, all named after the different letters of the alphabet. As we walked, he surprised me by repeating poetry from the great poets. He was a man who enjoyed the beauties of the countryside and the changing of the seasons. We went back to the house and had dinner in a little kitchen. Then we went into the sitting room. It was a pleasant little house, untidy and full of books. "Farmers don't have much time for reading," he said, "but somehow I can't help it." Mr. Holbrook left the room to talk to the gardener. "He has so many books," said Miss Pole, "but they are so dusty." "He must be a very clever man," said Miss Matty. "Yes, he is," said Miss Pole, "but I am afraid living alone has made him rough." "Not rough," said Miss Matty. "I would call him unusual, like all clever people." When he returned, Mr. Holbrook offered to read us some poetry. He began reading a long poem called Locksley Hall. 5 minutes later, Miss Matty was asleep. She woke up when he stopped reading. "What a pretty poem," she said, although she had not heard it. "Pretty, madam, it's beautiful," said Mr. Holbrook. "Oh, yes, I meant beautiful," she said. "It is like that beautiful poem by Dr. Johnson. My sister used to read it. I forget the name of it." "Which do you mean, madam? What was it about?" "I don't remember what it was about. It was written by Dr. Johnson, and it was very beautiful." "I don't remember it," he said, "but I don't know Dr. Johnson's poems well. I must read them." That evening, as we got into our carriage, Mr. Holbrook said that he would call on us soon. Miss Matty seemed pleased to hear this. When we arrived home, Martha came to help us out. She always took care of Miss Matty. "Eh, dear ma'am," she said, "you went out in such a thin shawl, it's cold outside. At your age, ma'am, you should be careful." "My age," said Miss Matty angrily. "My age? How old do you think I am?" "Well, ma'am, I don't mean to upset you, but I think you are close to 60. Martha, I'm not yet 52, said Miss Matty. She had remembered her youth that day and was annoyed to see that time had passed away. Miss Matty never talked to me about her young love for Mr. Holbrook. She had probably kept it a secret in her heart. But I watched her carefully and noticed that she still had feelings for him. She wore her best cap every day and sat near the window to watch the street. He came. He asked how we were. Then suddenly he stood up. Well, madame, can I bring you anything from Paris? I'm going there in a week or two. To Paris? Yes, madame. I've always wanted to go there. If I don't go soon, I may not be able to go at all. We were very surprised. We thanked him and told him we did not need anything. Just as he was going out of the room, he turned back. Oh, I nearly forgot, madam. Here are the poems that you enjoyed so much at my house. He took out a small parcel from his coat pocket. Goodbye, miss, he said to me. He turned to Miss Matty. Goodbye, Matty. Take care of yourself. And he was gone. But he had given her a book, and he had called her Matty, just as he used to do 30 years ago. Soon after this, I left Cranford, giving instructions to Martha to look after Miss Matilda. I asked her to write to me if Miss Matilda was not well. Martha would send me a note every now and then. In November, she sent a note to say her mistress was very low and not eating well. I was upset to hear that, so I packed up my things and went to Cranford. Miss Matilda did look unwell. I went downstairs to have a talk with Martha. How long has she been so ill? I asked. Well, just over 2 weeks, she replied. It was one Tuesday after Miss Pole's visit. She looked tired and I thought she needed a good sleep. But she has not been well ever since that day. I went to see Miss Pole the next day. She had not seen Miss Matilda in 2 days, but she had bad news about Mr. Holbrook. Poor Cousin Thomas, she said. The journey to Paris was not good for him. His housekeeper wrote to me to say he has been very ill. He has not been going out to the fields at all. He just sits in his house all day, not doing anything. Does Miss Matilda know about this? I asked. Yes, my dear, I told her about it 2 weeks ago, and now I must go to her because I promised to tell her if I heard anything. I received a letter today. Poor Thomas does not have long to live. Miss Pole and I went back to Miss Matty's house. I took her to the little drawing room and left the ladies alone. Miss Matty did not come down to dinner that evening. At tea time, she came into the drawing room. It was clear that something was troubling her. She talked to me about the old times and her sister Deborah. I could feel that she had blamed her sister about her lost love, and now she was feeling sorry about it. She told me about all the good things Deborah had done when they were young. Deborah had always helped the poor. She had once danced with a lord. She had taught girls cooking and sewing. She had looked after Miss Matty when she was seriously ill. I realized that her illness had happened right after Mr. Holbrook had left Cranford. We talked softly and quietly that long November evening. The next day, Miss Pole came to tell us that Mr. Holbrook was dead. Miss Matty could not speak. She was shaking nervously. I knew that she was trying her best to hide her feelings. That evening, Miss Matilda was very silent and thoughtful. Later, she called Martha. She seemed to be hesitating to say something. Martha, she said at last, you are young. Yes, ma'am. I am 22, ma'am. You may one day meet a young man you like, and who likes you. If you meet such a young man, and if I think he is respectable, he can come to see you once a week. Miss Matty did not expect an answer, so she was surprised when Martha said, Please, ma'am, there's Jem Hearn. He's a carpenter, and he makes 3 and 6 pence a day. He's very tall, ma'am, and if you like, he can come tomorrow night. I have often noticed that almost everyone is stingy in their own way. They have their own little habits to save money. Miss Matty was stingy about candles. We had many candles, but used as few as possible. In the winter afternoons, she would sit knitting for 2 or 3 hours in the dark or by firelight. When I offered to bring candles, she would refuse. We could have them at tea time, and we only burnt one at a time. One night, I remember I was annoyed about not having candles. Miss Matty had fallen asleep by the fire, and I was trying to sew in the dark. Miss Matty said a few words in her sleep, and I thought that she was dreaming about her early life. When Martha brought in the candle and tea, Miss Matty suddenly woke up. She looked sad, but she tried to give me her usual smile. During tea time, she talked about her childhood and youth. After tea, she went to her room and came back with some old family letters. She had often told me about wanting to destroy them. She did not want them to be read by strangers, but she had never been able to look at them. The earliest letters were tied together in a packet, and Miss Jenkins had written on it, "Letters between my father and my mother before their marriage in July 1774. The rector of Cranford was about 27 when he wrote them, and Miss Matty's mother, Molly, was 18. The rector's letters were full of love and longing, while the girl's letters were about clothes and the wedding dress that she wanted. "We must burn the letters, I think," said Miss Matty. "No one will care for them when I am gone." And one by one she dropped them into the fire. She watched them as they burned brightly and went up the chimney. Next there were some letters between the mother and the grandmother. They were about Deborah's birth. The grandmother gave her daughter advice about how to take care of a baby. There were also some letters between the rector and his wife from the time he was away in London. His letters were full of Latin words, and hers had lots of grammar and spelling mistakes. She told her husband about Deborah and little Matty. Then there was a letter from the grandfather about the birth of a boy. I was surprised because I had not heard about a brother. The sisters had never mentioned his name, so I guessed that he had died young. Then there were Miss Jenkins's letters. Miss Matty felt bad about burning them. "Deborah's letters are so much better than the others," she said. "Anyone who reads them can learn from them." She took the letters from me, lit a second candle, and began reading them aloud. Oh, how bored I was listening to those never-ending letters. It took us 2 nights to finish reading them. The longest of Miss Jenkins's letters was from 1805, when she was away visiting some friends near Newcastle upon Tyne. People were expecting an attack by Napoleon Bonaparte, and Miss Jenkins was very much worried. She wrote about preparations made for the attack. One night the church bells rang, and everyone panicked. She wrote about how scared she was. "It was a difficult time, my dear," said Miss Matty. "We were all scared. I used to wake up in the night and think I heard the French entering Cranford. Many people talked of hiding in the salt mines, and my father wrote several sermons against Napoleon. There were also letters between the rector and his son. Peter Arley Jenkins, poor Peter, Miss Matty would call him, was at school at Shrewsbury during this time. The rector wrote the letters in Latin. The boy wrote about his studies and the plans for his education. He would sometimes add a note at the end, 'Mother dear, send me a cake.' The later letters of poor Peter were different. He had been in some trouble at school, and he was sorry. One letter was to his mother. 'My dear, 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 dearest mother, I will be a better boy. Please don't be ill for me, darling mother.'" After she read this, Miss Matty started crying. She got up and took the letter to her room. She was worried that it would accidentally get burned. "Poor Peter," she said. "He was always in trouble. He had bad friends, but he loved fun and jokes. Poor Peter." As poor Peter was planning to be successful at school and to go to Cambridge and have a great career. But this never happened. "Peter was my mother's favourite," said Miss Matty. "When Peter came back from Shrewsbury School without honours, my father was disappointed. He could not afford a tutor, so he began to tutor Peter himself. And it did go well for some time." "What went wrong?" I asked. "Well, Peter was a very nice boy. He was like dear Captain Brown, always ready to help any old person or child. But he liked joking and having fun. I could laugh to think of some of Peter's jokes. No, my dear, I won't tell you about them because they were shocking. One time he dressed up as a very old man and visited our house. My father believed him and gave him a copy of the sermons he had written about Napoleon Bonaparte." "Did Miss Jenkins know about these tricks?" I asked. "Oh no, Deborah would have been shocked. No one knew but me. He used to say that the old ladies in the town wanted something to talk about. But then a terrible, sad thing happened." Miss Matty got up and opened the door. No one was there. She rang the bell, and when Martha came, she told her to go to town to get some eggs. "You are not afraid to go, Martha, are you?" she asked her. "No, ma'am, not at all. Jem Hearn will go with me." When Martha was gone and we were alone, Miss Matty put out the candle. "We can talk by firelight, my dear," she said, and continued the story of Peter. "Well, you see, Deborah was away from home. It was spring. My father had gone out to see some sick people. Peter was a sweet boy, but he liked to annoy Deborah. She never laughed at his jokes, and she thought he was rude. This upset him. So that day, he went up to her room and dressed himself in her old clothes and put on her cap. He told me later that he wanted to give the town something to talk about. And he went out to the garden and began picking flowers and singing loudly. Oh dear. When my father came up the street, he saw a little crowd of people looking into our garden. At first, he thought the people were looking at the pretty flowers, but when he came nearer, he saw Peter singing. His face went white with anger. He rushed through the garden door, came up to poor Peter, and shouted at him in front of everyone. "You have shamed our family. You are not my boy anymore," he yelled. "My dear, that boy's little joke broke my mother's heart and changed my father forever." When my father was done, Peter turned and walked slowly into the house. He went to my mother, put his arms around her and kissed her, and before she could speak, he was gone. When my mother heard what had happened, she sat down, her face white. Later, she went up to Peter's room, but she could not find him. We looked around the house, but he was nowhere. We kept searching all afternoon. My mother was very nervous. "Peter, Peter, my darling, where are you?" she cried. My father sat with his head in his hands, not speaking. My mother kept going from room to room, in and out of the house. It was nearly dark when at last my father got up. He held my mother's arm. "Molly," he said, "I did not think this would happen." He looked into her face for comfort, but there was no feeling in her eyes. But then she saw the tears in his eyes and she said, "Dearest John, don't cry, come with me and we'll find him." And together they walked through the house and the garden, looking for Peter. I wrote to Deborah and asked her to come home. Then I sent a message to Mr. Holbrook to ask him if Peter was at his house. Mr. Holbrook had been very kind to Peter in the past. He had even taught him how to fish. But Mr. Holbrook was not home, and nobody had seen Peter. It was night now, and my father and mother kept searching for him. The next day, Deborah came home. There was no news of Peter. We were all very upset. Oh, it was an awful time. My mother was never the same again. "Where was Mr. Peter?" I asked. "He had gone to Liverpool. There was war then, and Peter had gone to join the Navy. They were glad to have a fine, tall boy like him, The captain wrote to my father, and Peter wrote to my mother. Let me find those letters. We lit the candle and found the letters. And we also found a letter from their mother to Peter. She was begging him to come back home. The letter had been returned unopened. The captain's letter asked the father and mother to come to Liverpool immediately if they wanted to see their boy. Peter's letter to her mother was full of love and sorrow. Mother, we may go into battle. I hope we will beat the French. But I must see you before I go. Unfortunately, my father and mother arrived there too late. The ship had gone, said Miss Matty. She was too late, too late. We sat in silence for some time. Peter's ship went to the Mediterranean, Miss Matty said. After some time, he was sent to India. How did your mother take it? I asked. She tried to be cheerful when she was around my father. She would say that Peter would become an admiral very soon. But when she was alone, she would cry and cry. Later, when she got weaker, she would cry when she was with me and Deborah. Mrs. Jenkins had died a year later. And the day after her death, we received a parcel from India, said Miss Matty. Peter had sent her a large, soft, white Indian shawl. Deborah took the shawl to my father. He looked at it and said, She always wanted a shawl like this. We will bury her in it. On the day of the funeral, Deborah told me that she would never marry and leave my father. She was a wonderful daughter to my father. When his eyes got weak, she read books to him and wrote his letters and sermons. Did Mr. Peter ever come home? Yes, once. He was a lieutenant. He and my father got along so well. My father was very proud of him. He took him into every house in Cranford. They always walked arm in arm, like best friends. And then? I asked. Then Peter went to sea again. And when my father died, Deborah and I had to come to this small house and have one servant instead of four. And Mr. Peter. Oh, there was some war in India, and we never heard from Peter again. I believe he is dead, but sometimes when I sit by myself in the quiet house, I think I hear his footsteps. But Peter never comes.